Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi, this is Josh Marshall, and this is the Josh Marshall Podcast. We have, you know, the last few months, like the beginning of every podcast, we talk about like what the latest thing is, either on impeachment or before it became impeachment, this Ukraine story. Now we're sort of moving back into the Democratic primary election as a key thing. We have a debate tonight. We're recording this episode about a little after noon on Tuesday, January the 14th. We have the debate tonight. We have the Iowa caucuses in, I guess, a little less than a month?
Three weeks.
Okay. On the 2nd or 3rd of February.
Right, and we've had a sort of a spate of dropouts. Cory Booker dropped out yesterday. You have sort of kind of comic relief dropouts, like Marianne Williamson?
That's yes, okay. That's right.
Dropped out like a few days ago.
It's funny. And Castro before that was
right. Castro, another real. I mean, obviously, neither Castro or Booker ever really gained traction in a polling sense, but they were, you know, people who a lot was expected of. I think definitely people who most people rightly think have important political futures. And in Castro's case, even though he didn't get any traction electorally in polling terms, he definitely moved the ball on immigration policy issues.
I think a lot of people expect maybe he will be a vice presidential pick, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely
in the mix in that.
Certainly, you know, one of several people who kind of like, if you're looking to do X or Y, like, okay, that's a logical thing. There's a whole, you know, we're going to get into a lot in this episode, but it's very interesting that it used to be, you have to go back now, 30, 40 years when either geographical balancing or ideological balancing was the primary thing for vice president. I mean, geographical balancing hasn't really been a thing in a long time. But certainly ideological balancing is. Now in the Democratic race, since, you know, maybe it'll be Elizabeth Warren. I think that's unlikely at this point, certainly possible. But certainly if the nominee is Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, it's not going to be another white guy.
Yeah.
That is definitely, I think everybody agrees, that is not going to happen.
Yep.
And there's this very interesting debate. Is it enough if it's a female vice presidential candidate? Or is it enough if it's a man of color, right? Or you know, kind of, it is a funny thing because, you know, just... And then you figure in the ideological layer, which obviously would be very different depending on if it were those two men. It's interesting. I just on a lark, I did a Twitter poll yesterday.
I saw that got a lot of response.
Yeah, it was insane. I think it's up to like 40,000 responses now or something like that. And it's
humble brag there.
Yeah, exactly. but what was striking to me, and it's obviously totally unscientific, but people who follow me on Twitter is a cross section of sort of people who are very, you know, kind of political activists, plugged in kind of digital kind of people. And so the question was, if Joe Biden is the nominee, who's his vice president? You know, who should it be? Not who will it be, but who should it be? And the options I gave were Booker, Harris, uh, wait, Booker, Harris, Warren, and Castro. And what I was struck by is from the very beginning, it was Harris. Like Harris, like 60% of people said Harris, and that never changed. What that mean? It sort of struck me that that was far and away. I mean, I think Warren was the next in like 21%, something like that. But again, to most people, it seems to be a very obvious thing.
Yeah, that is interesting.
Obviously, an African American woman. I don't think that is only that. She's a very dynamic person. I don't know quite how else to put that. She has a lot of energy behind her. In some ways, it didn't quite click for her as a top of the ticket candidate. But
certainly, like, she's younger than Biden by quite a few years. That certainly
helps.
It's not
hard.
It's not hard.
Also, the whole thing of how she wasn't, you know, never caught fire at the top of the ticket is in no small part because people thought there's no way that a black woman will win. And so it's kind of a way, I think, of putting her at the bottom of the ticket of preserving what everyone liked about her. And I get the sense that she was widely well-liked.
I think she was,
but the problem people had was, oh, well, there's no way she could beat Trump. So it's kind of like there's that anecdotal stuff in almost all of these candidate stories, especially the ones who have dropped out recently, the Bookers, the Castros, where people were like, oh, I like him personally, but
it's the electability.
He can't win. The electability thing, which obviously is such a cross-section of, you know, what most of our presidents have looked like so far, all but one, you know?
Right. All right. Well, before we get too deep into this, let's pay our respects to Grady's Cold Brew real quick.
And okay. Then... Well, I am sitting here drinking Grady's Cold Brew. We were talking before we started recording because it looked like we might have a Grady's crisis in this office where we thought we might actually run out of Grady's, but apparently we just got a new supply. So everything is...
All is right in the world.
Everything is fine on that front. Do you love to save a buck by skipping the coffee shop? Of course, you know, of course you do. Are you a do-it-yourselfer? Are you a brew-it-yourselfer? This version of the Grady's, copy, the brew-it-yourselfer. Like, I love Grady's, but
by half.
Yeah.
I just struggle.
As opposed
with it.
To someone else brewing Grady's for you, I guess.
I don't know. It's do it yourself or brew it yourself. It's like a step too far. But that doesn't mean that the actual Grady's coffee product is not awesome. So let's get back to this. So is Grady's Cold Brew. You asked and they delivered. Brew it yourself with Grady's New Orleans style coarse ground coffee blend. Designed to work in any cold or hot coffee maker, one bag makes 24 servings of Grady's Cold Brew exactly the way you want it. Order online and receive 16 ounces of their famous blend of 100% Arabica beans with French chicory in a resealable pouch for long-lasting freshness. Ready to give it a swirl? Get 20% off your first order at gradyscoldbrew.com with promo code TPM. Or if you're really in a rush, you can also order Grady's at amazon.com for next day delivery. So, great coffee, occasionally B+ in terms of ad copy, but we absolutely love.
Yeah, we love them anyways.
Grady's Cold Brew, and it's like when there's not like enough Grady's Cold Brew either at this office or at my home.
Yeah,
it gets under.
Yeah,
my
totally.
Skin.
It's it's the lifeblood of
it's really good stuff. Everybody should try it.
So speaking of candidates who have dropped out, maybe we can talk about Booker for a second and maybe why he hasn't.
Can I address this point we were talking about before? I have a slightly different take on this and on the electability issue. I think what you are saying, Kate, is right, but I think there is another electability issue, which is that we have national head-to-head general election polls. We've had them for a long time. Obviously we've had them forever, but I'm talking about in this race, we have pretty dense data going back, 8 or 10 months now. Now, when people talk about primary polls are all among Democrats. So you can say if Joe Biden is ahead, maybe that's because people think he's the strongest candidate and therefore they make him the strongest candidate by supporting him. Okay. That doesn't operate the same way in general election polls because the variance in general election polls is almost by definition people who are only lightly connected to either the Democratic or the Republican candidate. Now, that's not 100% the case. You can also have it also figures in enthusiasm among partisans. So, for instance, if you have a head-to-head Trump versus Sanders poll, you may have some more moderate Democrats saying, "Oh, I just, you know, I can't. It's hard for me to get there with Sanders." That kind of pulls them down a little. Something similar with Biden. You know, more left Democrats, a little under-enthused. But these polls suggest something very consistent over a long period of time, and that is that of the top candidates, Biden consistently has the best numbers against Trump over a long, long, long period of time. At the beginning, that was maybe like, okay, it's basically name recognition, blah, 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 blah. But everybody knows who Bernie Sanders is. And at this point, pretty much everybody knows who Elizabeth Warren is, even the case of like with, you know, Buttigieg or something like that. So I actually do think there is an electability factor that is, it's not gospel. I mean, obviously polls can change, but there is a metric that is out there that is not just kind of Democrats kind of psyching themselves out about you know, kind of like, I would support Harris, but I don't think an African-American woman can get elected, so I'm going to support Biden, or I'm going to, you know, this kind of thing. So I actually think there is an electability thing out there, and I do think that electability data point definitely does feed back into the primary polls. So I don't think this thing is just about people kind of psyching themselves out. I think there's something else there, for better or worse. Now, that may suck if Joe Biden is a slightly better general election candidate, again, in that just polling sense, than Elizabeth Warren or Harris. That may not be great. Depending on one's perspective, but I think there is a reality to it that does figure back into people's primary.
Well, I think those two things are not completely divorced from each other either, because part of the thinking of, you know, Kamala Harris can't beat Trump stems from the place that most people are too sexist or racist to vote for her, which may well be some of the motivation that's feeding into the, I would pick Biden over Trump, but not Kamala Harris over Trump.
Absolutely. I guess what I'm saying, though, is I think there's in a lot of the present, you know, discourse, dialogue, mm-hmm. people say, well, it's not that, I mean, obviously we can't know why he's a stronger candidate. I mean, certainly, you know, it's a pretty decent argument
right.
that those two factors play into it. But there's a part of the discourse that basically says it's only true because you are assuming that a woman can't, and therefore you're picking Biden. So it's basically kind of people psyching themselves out. If everybody would just say who they really would support, that it would sort of fade away.
I see.
And that's what I'm sort of pushing against.
Yeah.
And again, obviously we can't really know, but yeah, I mean, it's.
Well, and I also, the other piece that I think is interesting about that poll and Harris's success in it followed by Warren's is, you know, this is like a debate I've been having with my mom, who's a, you know, a kind of MSNBC liberal, has been for a long time. And our thing we get into is she's like, this election is too high stakes for a woman to be at the top of the ticket. You know, we can't afford to lose. And I'm always like, Democrats are never going to go into a presidential election and be like, you know what, this one doesn't matter so much, so let's take a chance on a
right.
woman. But her big thing is she's like, I think our first female president is going to be a vice president for, you know, bottom of the
first.
Ticket to a man. And
right.
then she,
right, right,
Americans
right.
will get comfortable enough seeing a woman in that position and we'll kind of elect her next time, which, you know, who knows?
Who
but
knows?
It could be people's reaction to that, people being too scared to have a woman at the top of the ticket again, but not you know, being not content with the whole, it's not time, like, America's not ready, let's kick this can down the road and, like, never have a woman president.
I feel like I've read arguments, too, in the past, it's been a while, but that some people make the argument that the first woman president would be a Republican instead of a Democrat, and that, I don't know exactly why. Also,
we, I'll tell you, for a long time, that was the first black president was going to be a president.
A Republican?
Yeah, a Republican, and obviously that didn't pan out.
Right.
What's the argument there?
Well, that you need to go against you need to kind of go against type. That to the extent that disproportionately the people who are not gonna hold back for voting for a black president will be people who are either Republicans or kind of, you know, sometimes Republicans, and so you need to kind of lock those people down with partisanship, and then, you know.
Right.
Whether this is true, obviously it didn't end up being true with Obama.
That just seems bonkers to me. But.
Or like, you know, you could maybe see a Nikki Haley or something like that potentially running for president on a Republican ticket.
The funny thing is that, you know, Hillary Clinton got the most votes, right?
So it's true.
It's a funny, you know, there is no way for us to know what happened in 2016. Or what will happen in 2020. But it is a funny thing, given that we actually have done this experiment and the woman got most votes. Now, obviously, that doesn't mean
a couple million.
Yeah, it doesn't mean 3 million. I mean, it doesn't mean she's president, but it kind of like, you know, it's also, it almost gets down to like, is it time for a woman to win the Electoral College?
Totally.
Are we that, you know?
Are we ready for a woman to win Wisconsin and Pennsylvania? No.
It's a weird debate, and that does get us. I know one of the things we want to talk about today is this blow up between Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. I mean, I was thinking yesterday.
Give us just a little bit of backstory, what happened in case our listeners.
Two or three days ago, the Bernie Sanders campaign, I don't think this is in any dispute, gave basically talking points or like scripts to its, you know, canvassers, people, I don't know if it's phone canvassers or door-to-door canvassers.
Yeah.
You know, here's what you say. You go and you're going to sort of make the case for Bernie, and they give you a script, basically, not word for word, maybe whatever. Okay. Part of that script was Elizabeth Warren. She's for the elites, she's the candidate of the elites, the sort of the people who have 10 degrees and make more, you know, make six figures and blah, 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 blah. Okay. This is not disputed that this happened. Demographically, there's a limited truth to that, that she does tend to be, if you look at the different candidates, she does well with people with higher educational attainment, people who tend to be a little more well off. Obviously, this was seen as a very negative hit between the two kind of left
candidates.
And the
Sanders talking points also said something about how she wouldn't expand the Democratic base, right? That Bernie was the candidate who could kind of attract a wider swath.
Right, which is always ironic since Bernie's not a Democrat, but whatever, right? Okay, so anyway, this was kind of, you know, he's going negative. This happens at this time so Bernie's going negative. And Warren comes out and basically says, you know, that's pretty disappointing, but I'm not going to go there. I don't go negative. And that has been her kind of thing. You know,
and the word she uses is that it's disappointing that the Sanders campaign would like trash me like that or something, right? Wasn't the word, it was like trashed as a verb was.
Okay,
kind of,
yeah.
And didn't they made some kind of pact, right? I didn't make that up. Or was that just an informal thing?
I don't.
That they were not going to go negative on each other?
Yeah, I can't. I think
maybe
it
just
was
a more friendly understanding.
I don't know quite what we know about. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe. Okay. So in any case, these reports surfaced yesterday from sources that there was this conversation that the two of them had 6 months ago. Or
it was
a year
like December
ago.
2018, I think.
Okay,
right?
A while back. In which, allegedly, Bernie said, I don't think a woman can run, can win.
Right.
And Warren said, well, don't agree on
that.
I think a woman can win the presidency. Okay. Now, to my eyes, when I saw this, like, this doesn't happen by accident. Because, again, this is allegedly a conversation the two of them had. Now, one would think two witnesses to that conversation, right? Okay. Presumably Bernie did not leak this.
Right.
And just as a reporter, I will tell you, and my colleagues here, I think, will definitely agree, sources come to you and tell you that first call you make is the Warren campaign. Like, is this true? This happened? The fact that the report got published means that the Warren campaign either said, yep, it happened, or, hey, we're not going to touch that. And not going to touch that leads to the story being published. So somehow or another, the...
It's not like they said, nope, no, that's totally...
This was at a minimum allowed to surface by the Warren campaign. And then a couple hours later, she puts out... Warren puts out a statement of, you know, an official statement in her own voice that basically says, you know, I don't want to be negative. I want to have blah, 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 and everybody's friends. And I also don't want to talk about private conversations, even that private conversation where Bernie said that a woman can't be president. And to be fair and clear, he said allegedly that he did not believe that a woman could be elected. Obviously, he's not saying a woman can't be president.
Right.
Now, that is just sort of like, that's like just dropping like an atomic bomb on Bernie Sanders in just the political moment that we are in. That is like, that's so devastating.
Yeah.
Now, he's denying it.
Yeah.
He denied it before that, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah,
he denied it in the CNN story, which kind of first broke this apparent conversation.
Pretty vociferously, yeah, right? Like, yes. He called it a lie or something. Not, you know, that was misinterpreted, it's out of context.
Like, yeah, I don't know. What did...
My understanding was his denial was fairly strong.
It was pretty explicit, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
The story's a lie.
It's hard for me to imagine that just who Elizabeth Warren is, I find it very hard to believe that she would just like, man, fuck, I'm so pissed at Bernie. He said, that's just...
Yeah.
I have to imagine that if Bernie is not lying, that they get into a... I mean, the funny thing is here is that let's assume for the sake of the conversation that Sanders did say this. What is kind of ironic and funny is that he's not that far off from where a lot of left mainstream feminism is, which is to say that patriarchy remains a strong enough force in American society that it's a big factor. And so yet for a man to say that, especially to a potential female candidate,
right,
man, that is just like take the kryptonite and eat the kryptonite, man.
I mean, it sucks, but it just kind of going off what you said, it doesn't seem out of the realm of possibility to me that he would say that. Not least because, you know, it's not in Sanders' interest to have Elizabeth Warren running at all. Like, they're occupying the same progressive lane. So, you know, if there's any Machiavellian part of him that's like, come on, Liz, you know a woman can't get elected. Why put yourself through this?
That is the thing, is that it's one thing if, I mean, it would not be great for him in any context, but at least as we understand this, he's basically lobbying her not to run.
Right.
And lobbying a female candidate
not to run, this was a while before they're both deciding to run.
Right. And so it's just, I just.
Do you wonder, too? I mean, something I'm curious about is what were his exact words, right? Was it a little bit more subtle than I just don't think a woman can win? Was it like, oh, you know, I think it's going to be unlikely, or, you know what I mean? And that kind of gets turned into
I think the whole thing, like, at the heart of the issue, Bernie Sanders is running for president again. He's a straight white man running for president like he did against Hillary Clinton, where he didn't really throw his support behind her in a timely way. So I just...
That's true.
When people are like so up in arms about this comment, it's like his behavior has reflected it. Like, yeah. I don't know why it's such a surprise.
Not just that, but I mean, there is... And again, I'm trying to kind of not get crosswise with the Bernie Sanders supporters among our readers, but it has certainly been a huge part of the public discussion about Sanders, and especially Sanders supporters, that misogyny is a big factor in that whole world. Now, right. Again, I'm not saying it. I'm just, I'm kind of saying it.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, it's not a matter. I almost knocked over my Grady's.
Things are getting coffee. Heated so in here.
Everybody kind of like there's a shudder through the studio. Yes, I don't think it's not that it's surprising, but in that context, it makes it, I think, pretty devastating. Just as a yeah. fact point.
How is she? I mean, she's going to be asked. They're both going to be asked about this tonight. I mean, I'm not. If you're Sanders, what do you say? You're like.
That's what I'm interested to see, because there's no way for him to disown it now without calling her a liar directly.
Yeah. 10 feet away from her.
Which just compounds it.
Because then you have this narrative together that, you know, Elizabeth Warren was told by a male colleague that she shouldn't seek a higher position, which, by the way, has happened to every woman in every industry since the beginning of time. And then on top of that, him saying she's making it up, an experience which is
yeah. Are you crazy, Liz?
Right.
Are you crazy?
An experience that for women is like part of your coming of age story. Like a man in every woman's life has told her she can't do X. You know. So it's just I just can't believe that he called it a lie if there is some fact in it.
Well, the funny thing is though is that he said it was a lie before she was saying it.
That's right. It was sort of sources. Close to Warren or kind of...
But that was a pretty bad decision because it was obvious that that story could only have been written if she and her campaign allowed it to be written, which is to say she was confirming it.
Right.
So her... I was surprised. I mean, to me, it had damaged him plenty to see the sourced things. I was stunned when she came out and said, "Yep, he said it." I mean, just because that. I mean, it's almost like, you know, they talk about overkill when someone stabs someone like 45 times. You know, so it's like, I mean, like Liz, he's dead. I mean, come on, let's have some respect for the corpse.
And but in that same token, even at his most naive, maybe he thought this story would come out, she'd see it and be like, "No, I'm not going negative. I wash my hands of this." Like, say he assumed that she wouldn't even address it. That just seems like bad politics to me.
Yeah. I have no explanation. I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously, I mean, lots of people have had this, many Democrats have had this conversation, had lots of conversations about gender in the presidency and you know, what role it played in Hillary Clinton's defeat. Gender has obviously always been a core constituent aspect of politics, but the extent to which it is a dividing line now is as much as it has ever been. I don't mean that in a subjective sense. I mean just in the sense of if you look at polls, the differential between who men support and who women support is bigger than it's ever been. I wonder if they just remember the conversation a little differently. And I don't know. I have no explanation because it's just sort of like that is an unwise conversation to have if you are a prospective male candidate and you are talking to a prospective female right. candidate. It's probably a conversation to leave to another setting.
I mean, what are the odds we think this is the very first question tonight?
Oh, hi.
As opposed to, I mean, hi. Unless maybe it's sort of an impeachment thing because...
They're like, they all kind of feel the same about impeachment, yeah. though. I just think the only viable road for him I can see is to do some kind of a softened mea culpa, to do something like I was referring to how hard it is for a woman to get elected,
right. yeah, totally.
Or like, you know, pin it on other people, like this is a sexist country or whatever.
I think it has...
That's like best case scenario.
Yeah, I think he has to say something like a misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. Probably not using that word.
Right.
But maybe something like, you know, I remember we talked about X and that it seemed clear that Hillary. It's a tough
because even if you're like, oh, you know, my memory is a little bit foggy on it, that's not a great look either, because I mean, yeah, it was more than a year ago, but it doesn't really make you look sharp
I think Kate's right. It has to be some version of, we both in good faith must remember this a little differently. And here's what I believe. Let's move on to like what I believe and I believe and blah.
Oh, I see the soft mea culpa transitioning right into, and anyone who thinks that I don't think someone as brilliant as Elizabeth Warren could be president, applause line. Mm-hmm. Blah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I was surprised to see her make that statement, just because I don't see her as, she's definitely a fighter, but she's not a fighter like that. That was like, again, that was just like dropping a bomb on him. I mean,
if he said that to her, then she's probably pissed.
Oh, I'm not saying she was wrong to do it. I'm simply saying it is overt and devastating,
yeah.
And that is not what I have seen of her style, which is more, you know, not do things in the background in a bad sense, but, you know, just you don't have to say everything quite out loud.
It's funny that it's taken this long for it to come out. I guess that we are really close to the Iowa caucuses, and a lot of people in Iowa apparently decide pretty late in the process who they're going to go for.
It's also the first time Bernie went negative on her, so she might have been saving it in a back pocket.
Right. Yeah, well, I guess it seems like in this case, there was like a document. So not like just vague, like, oh, kind of his supporters are saying stuff. This was, I don't think it's the first time he's gone negative, he in the sense of his campaign. And look, let's be honest, campaigns are big organizations. Just because his campaign put out a script, I mean, I would think it's there's no reason to think that he even saw that script. But obviously there's, you know, candidates responsible. You kind of set a tone and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, I think it's pretty bad for him. I don't know what else quite to say.
Yeah. Anything else we're looking out for tonight in the debate? I guess if you're Biden, you're pretty stoked that they're just kind of fighting it out. And
could not have written himself a better news cycle. Yeah. Fight between those two.
Wasn't there something else that there's something else that happened? There was also that poll. I think it was the posted a national poll of African American voters, and not surprising if you've been following the polls and demographics of this race, that it was something like, you know, 50% support for Biden and then everybody else. And, you know, just and you know, this has been discussed a lot. It is disproportionately older African Americans. I think maybe over, I don't know if it's over 35 or over 40. I think Sanders may be ahead among African American voters in
the younger.
Yeah,
he is,
like maybe under 30 or
yeah,
something
I think
like that.
Voters under 30, he seems to dominate kind of across the board.
And specifically, voters of color under 30 or black voters under 30, but they also make up something like 20% of the electorate. Like it's overwhelmingly smaller.
I mean, if you especially when you factor in turnout,
right?
It's probably even more with probably even more in primaries.
Right.
I mean, it is this. It's one of the very interesting and sort of, you know, the electoral gods being mischievous in a way, that so much of the dialogue of this campaign is, you know, Biden invented mass incarceration and Biden was big buds with these old segregationists and Biden this, Biden that. And yet the reason that he is the front runner is because of African-American voters who overwhelmingly support him. And it's not for me to explain why that is, but it is. And that is just one of the ironies of this race. In any case, that was another thing that I think was a good news cycle for him, having that fact put out there.
And in the last debate, Buttigieg was still in the midst of this kind of boomlet in Iowa, right? So he was the target of more attacks, and it's still pretty much a toss-up in Iowa, right? I mean, so I assume he'll kind of be on the defensive to some extent. It sort of feels like everyone's really trying to, it's kind of the last chance to really, I don't know, make yourself stand out before the votes are actually starting to be cast.
Yeah, I don't know if this is my impression or if this is a fair one, but it feels to me that Buttigieg has kind of fallen out of headlines at the very least since then. You know, he was kind of, you know, to my memory, it was kind of like, oh, he's the Iowa wunderkind, but is polling at like 0% outside, you know, in other early voting states, you know. But even since then, his Iowa dominance seems to have shrunk.
It's weird. I don't have the actual polls in front of me, but my perception is that in the last, say, 2 or 3 weeks, there's been a series of Iowa polls, and they've all had different front runners, and they're kind of, I guess probably the takeaway from all of them together is that you've got three or four people clustered at the top in the mid-high teens, very low 20s. And especially when you figure in how the caucuses work, that it's not necessarily your first choice. It's sort of like a, you know, peer pressure, ranked choice voting.
It's all weirdly in public, right? I could be sitting next to my boss, Josh, here, and Josh gets up for one guy, and I, you know, it kind of creates an awkward situation.
First thing is there shouldn't be caucuses. Let me just put that out there to start with. But in reaction to that advocacy, that belief, which is righteous, and everybody should hold that view, what they've done this, what I believe they've done this time is they are going to poll everybody at the beginning. So you come in, who's your first choice? Okay, put that down. Then I think you sort of get together and group, and then there's that next one, and then you kind of do the caucusing, and there's, you know, kind of, if you don't get, if Steyer doesn't have, you know, 10 people at this, then everybody's got to regroup and everything. But I think what I heard is that this time they're going to collect and publicize each of those things. So there won't even necessarily be like a winner in the old sense, because certainly if I was the candidate and I won the sort of the everybody's, you know, kind of what you said coming in, I'd say, dude, I'm the winner, man. Like, I don't care when everybody, like, you know, made everybody feel bad and everything and talked for a while.
Right.
So it's gonna be very muddled. I think there was, to Kate's point, I think there was a thing maybe a couple weeks ago where Buttigieg seemed like he might win Iowa and New Hampshire. Mm. And then there was a sense of like, well, you know, yes, he's nowhere, you know, in the rest of the country. But you win Iowa and New Hampshire, that can change really fast. Mm-hmm. And then everybody kind of like, you know, was thinking, but now that doesn't seem like. Yeah. I mean, what seems at least possible now is that Biden could win one or both of those. He'll win decisively in South Carolina. He'll probably win Nevada. So sort of like if he wins.
And then it's on to Super Tuesday after that, basically, right?
Yeah. And like, he's the only one who I think can, you know, he can lose both and still come back with strong showings in those other places. I mean, you've got this, you know, ridiculous thing that the party that is overwhelmingly the party of people of color throughout the country, overwhelmingly, you know, defines its race by these two states where, like, there are no black people.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I'm not saying there are literally no black people, but both of those states, I think, are the white population is well into the mid-90s or something like that. So.
And just small populations in general, really. I mean, when you compare to some of the other states.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on. But before we do, let's take a quick break.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app
or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
All right, well, we can end on impeachment today. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi huddled with Democrats this morning. She put out an official statement after that saying that tomorrow there will be a resolution on the House managers. The articles of impeachment will be sent over to the Senate, and it seems like things are going to get started in a real way soon. I think tomorrow, like I said, tomorrow I think is the vote to kind of officially kick things off. We've got Martin Luther King Day on Monday, so it seems like probably things won't start in earnest until maybe middle of next week or maybe later next week, because I think there's a bit of housekeeping to be done kind of in the interim. But how do you guys feel about that? It's actually happening.
I guess I feel like the whole witness thing has at least, I don't want to sound cynical about this, but has at least added a degree of interest to the proceedings. Mm-hmm. Like, at least there's an opportunity for, you know, Republicans to stake an independent stand if they want to hear witnesses. I mean, that's a vote that at least we'll watch pretty eagerly.
And it seems like even the White House this morning, we had a post that kind of was trying to read between the lines a little bit. Hogan Gidley, one of the deputy White House mm-hmm. press secretaries, was saying, yeah, Trump wants a fight, you know, and this comes after Trump basically has been saying, oh, let's just dismiss the articles of impeachment
sure,
outright.
Yeah. But, like Trump also wanted to be impeached, right?
Right, yeah. It sounds like they're kind of opening the door to witnesses, too. I mean, it's really up to Mitch McConnell, and
right.
Mitch McConnell
who
might.
Doesn't want
yeah,
them.
Who doesn't want them. And Trump is clearly just following McConnell's lead right. on that. But, I mean, it does seem like there's a, I don't know, is it, would you put it a 50-50 chance? Maybe we'll get some witnesses in the trial? I don't know.
It's funny. I don't know, because in our Slack chat, our, you know, kind of a staff chat that we have in the office, it seemed like we were trying to get a sense, and I was trying to get a sense of this last night, like the White House has made these statements kind of, you know, sort of making it sound like, okay, yeah, maybe there'll be witnesses. Like, are they kind of thinking like, okay, they're going to be witnesses, so let's make it like, oh, we, you know, I broke up with you, you didn't break up with me kind of thing, like trying to make it like they're not being rolled or something like that.
Yeah.
It's a little hard. I mean, there has been this, you know, this talk with like Susan Collins and blah, 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 blah. I mean, there seems like there's movement in that direction, but man, I'm still really skeptical.
I know.
Just because, I mean, not least, here's the thing. It's not just that Trump doesn't want it. I mean, yeah, maybe you have like Fiona Hill again, but that's not what we're talking about.
Right.
We're talking about like Mick Mulvaney, mm-hmm. John Bolton, whatever you want to say about these people, I don't think they're going to lie under oath in a Senate trial. That's, I certainly don't think John Bolton's going to be. I don't think I think that's a little too much for people. And I think witnesses could be really bad for Trump. I'm not saying he gets convicted, but I think it could be really bad. And so like, if you're Republicans, why do you want that? Like, why do you want that?
And by
why
all
do you
accounts,
want any chance of that?
And by all accounts, McConnell wants this over pretty quickly, right? I mean, we're not talking about an immediate dismissal, but I think we've talked on this podcast maybe a couple weeks, right? I mean, there's some, is it 24, 36 hours? There's some kind of set length of time for each side to make their case, right? To make their arguments, and that kind of will take up X number of days. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, yeah. We're not talking about a super long time, but probably a couple weeks,
I guess,
3 weeks.
Just the way it looks to me now is there are not a whole lot of good options for Republicans, because either you block the witnesses and then you are handwriting all these ads for Democrats saying, oh, you were so, like, clearly you're pretty convinced of his guilt if you won't let there be a proper trial, right? And then they allow witnesses. And I'm, you know, I'm with you, Josh. I don't think there's any way that someone like John Bolton will get up there and will just lie for the president. I just don't see it happening, which means that you hear that kind of damning testimony, even if the Republicans do hijinks like call Hunter Biden or nonsense like that. And then, you know, you have, I don't see any way that Republicans actually vote to convict. Like, I don't even think we'll see like any individuals break off on that, much less meet that sky high threshold. So it's just kind of like, you either don't allow witnesses and you're pretty complicit with it being a sham trial, or you allow witnesses, all this damning information, then you're like, but he's fine. You know, he's not guilty though.
Yeah, I first of all, 100% agree. I think it is extraordinarily unlikely that any Republican votes to convict, let alone, what is it, you need like 17 or 8? I mean, it's preposterous, totally preposterous. But that doesn't mean you can't get damaged a lot by these witnesses. And frankly, not even, I think there's also not a lot of appetite for Republicans for like bringing in like Hunter Biden. I mean, just on the merits, it's ridiculous. Whatever you think of Hunter Biden and, you know, nepotism or kind of trading on his, he's not relevant to what's being discussed here. He's just, I mean, in any trial setting, it would just be ruled out because it's just not relevant. Just
right.
Nothing to do with anything. I have a very hard time imagining they will let there be witnesses because it will just be bad for them. It will be really bad, and not really bad, and really bad because they still have to acquit him.
Right.
Because they still have to vote with him, and it'll just make it harder. And
draw it out, too, I guess, right? I mean,
yeah, you know, to what you were saying about 2 weeks, my recollection is the Clinton trial lasted a couple weeks, and there were witnesses. Everything had been videotaped. It was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I think what they want is whoever it is, you know, Adam Schiff or whoever, I guess, spends a day walking everybody through it.
Mm-hmm.
That Cipollone guy gets up, says it. And then Mitch McConnell comes in and said, okay, guess we've heard enough. Okay, bye.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a week or something like that. I don't know. I mean,
especially because it's a 6-day trial, right? It's Monday through Saturday. So it's even, you know, there's more time in the week to kind of get down to business, I guess.
And this, I think, herein lies the great political genius of Nancy Pelosi, because if she didn't hold on to those articles, I'm telling you, this witness thing would not even be a big story. And most Americans, understandably, do not know the nuts and bolts of an impeachment trial. So it just would have been like a procedural decision McConnell's making, would not get on most people's radars. And like Tierney and I kind of disagreed with this about this on the inside briefing, because I think her position was that Pelosi came out too strong at the beginning, kind of looking for concessions from McConnell that she never got. But I just really feel like that delay made this witness thing the big story and put an awful lot of Senate Republicans in a pretty precarious place going into this. I think this is going to be hard to package as a win for them.
I totally agree. I don't think there is any, I with all respect to our colleague Tierney, I don't think that's right. I don't think they ever had the sense that McConnell was going to fold. It was just clear, and I think she has been vindicated in this, that every day you're talking about witnesses is a bad day for Senate Republicans. And whether you actually get them to fold is sort of is not the point. I mean, maybe they could have. Maybe they still will. Who knows? But I completely agree with you, Kate. It's just every day has been a plus for Democrats because you're almost having like, you know, an impeachment trial of the mind for a month before the actual one gets started, you know, thinking through like, are you really going to acquit him? Are you really going to kind of shut this down and not agree to have any witnesses? It's just it. And it was made perfectly clear by who was yelling about it. Trump getting on Twitter every single day. He's so mad not having a trial. McConnell, everybody, you know, the various, you know, kind of alt-right trolls who yell about things. They were clearly all really, really pissed. So that means it was the right decision.
All right. Well, let's leave it there.
All right.
Lots coming up. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned.
Yeah, stay tuned. And remember, Grady's Cold Brew Iced Coffee, which is completely awesome. And if you want to give it a try, you can get 20% off your first order at gradyscoldbrew.com with promo code TPM. Or you can join the Amazon Borg Hive by ordering from amazon.com for next day delivery. Sounds good.
All right.
Thanks, see you next week.
Later, folks.